originating from our Jimmy John's of Lexington studios. This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
But it was all for Chuck McGee. Super Sabre wins the Derby for Todd Fletcher.
Basalt will give trainer Steve Asmussen career win number 6,000.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Oxbow and D-Wayne Lucas. Trainer D-Wayne Lucas, a sixth win.
And Al's Rosie is going to give trainer Gary Contessa his 2,000th career win.
And Dialed In never got to them. It was Animal Kingdom for Graham Motion.
Steve Hobby with career victory number 1,000 at Oaklawn.
Now here's Mike Penna and Jude Feld.
Good afternoon once again, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. This is indeed the show trainers listen to, and we are happy to have you listening over the course of the next hour here today. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, along with my usual entry mate, that's retired top trainer. You know him as the Pontiff of the Pick Four, Jude Feld. We welcome everybody joining us throughout North America on Sirius 219 XM Channel 206, and all of you tuning in worldwide with our live streaming on your computer, your mobile device, or your tablet at horseracingradio.net. JT, we are once again live from our Jimmy John's of Lexington broadcast studios for this edition of Trainer Talk. And last week, we had a chance to make our way down to Gulfstream Park for the Florida Derby, and we had a chance to visit with Dale Romans. Now, Dale had been on this show several years ago when we first started it. He talked about his life and his background at that point. This time, he spent a lot of time looking back on some of the top moments in his career, and so many people enjoyed that program. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was really great to sit down with Dale, and right there at Gulfstream near the finish line in a box and just shoot the breeze like we were out at the races having fun, which we were. But it's always great to get together with Dale, and he told some fantastic stories, and evidently he got a lot of great feedback from people about the show.
Yeah, he did. He made a point to let us know how many people were tuned in. So for our guest here tonight, no pressure, by the way. It's kind of like coming on the heels of a legend, right? coming up after a guy like Dale Romans. But looking forward to this visit with trainer Elizabeth Dobles. And Elizabeth, not nearly the household name that Dale is, at least not yet. But that's one of the great things about this program. We've had so many trainers on that are just starting their training careers, and that's where Elizabeth is right now. She went out on her own last year, and since that time, how about this? She has saddled 38 horses. 8 of those have won, which is good for a 21% win rate. In 2017, those numbers for Elizabeth are even better. She saddled 18 horses this year. She's already won with 6 of those, so 33%. How about that?
Yeah, that's fantastic. And it's always great to have young trainers on the show, and so people can put the name with the face, so to speak. And I always love it when we have the gals on, because my father had a woman trainer in the 50s. She was the only gal to have stalls at Santa Anita. So it's a lot of fun. I love the ladies, as everyone knows.
Well, on that note, without further ado, Elizabeth Dobles is indeed with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton. Elizabeth, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, happy to have you on board. And boy, you think about those numbers and the success you're having, especially here this year, which is your first full year of training on your own. Elizabeth, it's not supposed to be this easy, is it?
No, I don't believe it is. I've been really lucky.
Well, and I'm sure it's not as easy as it looks. So many trainers that come on this program and they talk about all the hard work and the time that it takes to be successful. I'm sure you're going through that same process.
Yeah, most of the work I was doing by myself until I started getting a few more horses, and then it got a little tougher trying to find employees that I would feel comfortable taking care of the horses for me.
Yeah,
it's slowly making its way.
When you're used to doing everything yourself and you're in total control, and then you have to switch over to employees, it's kind of hard sometimes to get the get the top grooms because you only have a few horses, and you know it's not like you're a famous trainer, and people are kind of reticent to go to work for you. Did you find that?
Not necessarily. I found people that really good employees that have worked with good horses and that wanted to stay in Florida all year. That's a new thing, as a lot of people will stay in one place. They're tired of moving around. It was just not knowing them personally to trust them. And because I gallop my own, I'm mostly on the track, so I don't get a chance to see as much that goes on in the barn as I would if I were an assistant.
Well, it's important to have that staff. And do you have like a foreman or an assistant as well?
No, I have two grooms and two hot walkers, and that's it.
How about finding the clients, Elizabeth? How challenging was that when you went out on your own?
Well, I haven't exactly found clients per se. I had Jeremiah get in contact with John Guernay, and he's the owner of Imaginary Stables. And he was looking for a trainer in Florida that would stay yearly. And he just recommended him, and we've done phenomenal together.
All right, talk about, you mentioned the name Jeremiah, this Jeremiah Engelhart. You worked with him for a long time, kind of learned the craft under Jeremiah. Tell me a little bit about that experience and how he kind of helped you along the way.
When I was really young, still in high school, I worked for his parents, just helping them out on weekends and holiday breaks. And that really, you know, got me into the racing part of horses. And when I turned, I want to say 17 or 18, I took out my assistant's license with him, and I stayed with him for 7 years. So he taught me everything that I knew.
Were you involved with horses before you came on the racetrack?
Yeah, both of my parents are involved with horses, but I would get a horse off the track every now and then and turn into a trail horse. But nothing really race-related. I'd go to the races because I had to, and I liked horses, but not exactly for the... I didn't inspire any trainer.
So where was the spark? Where did that come from? When did you wake up and say, you know, I think I really like this business?
Working for Jeremiah, you know, he let me have free reign of the shed row in Belmont and Saratoga. And I really liked the idea of being on the ground with the horses. Before, when I was in high school, I wanted to just ride horses and be a jockey or a jumper, anything that involved just riding the horses. But when I got to his barn and I learned the whole aspect of how much it takes to get a horse to the races, I really enjoyed that.
Elizabeth, were your parents interested in horses in any way?
Oh, yeah. Both of my parents gallop up in Finger Lakes. My mom, she just retired from galloping a few years ago, and she lives down here in Florida now. And my father, he still works up there.
All right, so let's go back to the very beginning then with Elizabeth Dobles. Did you grow up at the racetrack? Were you one of those kids that was hanging out at the barn all the time? Or was it just kind of more of a passing type of interest when you were very, very young?
No, I really did grow up on the racetrack. My parents would take me to work with them on the weekends, and I would hang out in the office and roll bandages and sweep and little stuff like that until I could actually put my hands on a horse. And then I got my own horse, and it was more of a hobby, I would say. And then once I got out of school and started working full-time at the racetrack, it sparked my interest, as you say.
How old were you at that point?
I started at 13. Up there on a farm, they have an indoor track, and I used to just gallop around there with a few racehorses during the winter months. And then when I was 16, I was allowed to get a license, and that's when I started working for Chris and Sheila Engelhart.
You mentioned getting your first horse. That had to be a special day for you. Tell me about that.
Yeah, his name was Colin the Red. He was just one of your plain bay horses with Snow White, and, you know, he had the personality, but he didn't have the looks, and he didn't have the speed to be a racehorse. He ended up just being a trail horse, so, you know, we could take him out in the field and ride him up there. It's really country up there, so it was nice. But I didn't do any show or anything off the grid.
Just a teenage girl and her horse riding through the fields.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Doble's with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So when you first went to the racetrack then, of course, you mentioned your parents galloping and being around the racetrack all the time. So it wasn't like it was a foreign concept to you. But when you walked into Jeremiah's barn for the first time, what do you remember about that day?
I used to just gallop for him. I first started galloping. I galloped for him. And then I went to Maryland and galloped there for a couple trainers. And then when I came back, he was transitioning through assistance, and he didn't have one. So I tried to help out as much as I could in the barns in the morning and the afternoon, and learning what he did. And that way I could be a part of it.
How would you describe Jeremiah and his approach to training horses?
I think it's really good. He keeps the horse the main priority. He has a huge stable now between Signal Lakes and Fairgrounds and Belmont, and then they ship to Saratoga. But he tries to make sure every horse gets what it needs.
Yeah, he joined us on this program a while back, and he talked about, you know, his upbringing and how he got started and some of the people that helped him along the way. And then you think about some of the moments that he's had in his career, and one name that comes to mind is Rhea Antonia. Were you there when Rhea Antonia was competing for Jeremiah?
Yes, I was. I was there when she shipped in, and I stayed with her until she left.
What do you remember about her?
Beautiful, beautiful horse, about 17 hands high, a nice color. She just had this huge head. I mean, she was gorgeous. And then it turns out she could run. That was just an added bonus.
What are some of the things that Jeremiah taught you about taking care of horses that you still use today?
It's tough to say. I really run my schedule pretty much like he does. You know, I change things here and there to make me more comfortable. But nothing really. I like to keep the horse the main priority. You know, if the horse isn't happy, then they're not going to run like it. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, he's somebody that really does treat the horses well, and I think that's why he's had so much success. Who were some of the other horses, Elizabeth, outside of Rhea Antonia, that you were around when you were working with Jeremiah that are always going to stand out to you?
Well, it started with Tamarin Hall. She was in the Breeders' Cup in, I believe, 2009 in Churchill. I went there with her. That was my first experience as a star. Was one of the ones that went to the Breeders' Cup, and it was really nice, lights and glamour and everything. Then we got King Creesa. And that was a big moment. He won a lot of stakes with us. And then Rhea Antonia came in. Of course, I had my favorites here and there, the other horses that I liked. But those were the most important horses that I've been involved with.
How many horses were you getting on all of his horses at that point? And did you get a chance to be aboard horses like Rhea Antonia and King Creesa and those big names that you just talked about?
No, those horses I was required to ride every day, you know, just to make sure they were sound and healthy, and you know, I could be the same rider for them. I used to get about 7 a day for him and run the barn at the same time. So it's pretty much what I do now, except I don't have a foreman or an assistant to help me out.
So you deal a lot with claiming horses. What do you look for when you claim one?
I look for one that's a diamond in the rough. You know, I don't want a horse that looks too good, because it would be really hard to improve one of those horses. I kind of look for one, you know, its coat could be better, you know, it could use more top line, more muscle here and there.
So it sounds like you spend a lot of time scouting horses at the track and looking out for possible claims.
Yeah, it's tougher for me to look on the program. You know, I can watch the race replays and that really helps. But looking at the program itself, it doesn't help me as much as actually seeing the horse in person and getting an idea of what potential it could have.
You know, I'm sure, Elizabeth, there's a lot of people listening to this program right now that are wondering what the process is that a trainer has to go through when they claim a horse. So when you're getting ready to look at a race, a claiming race, take us through, start to finish. What's the Elizabeth Doble's approach and the process to eventually claiming a horse? How does it work?
Okay, so first somebody would enter the horse, whatever trainer that has it. Then you would see it in the program. It might be dropping in class or, you know, any real reason. The drop in class or it just seems like a decent horse that could have potential. Then next thing you would do is look at the program, see if, you know, it has back class or not, because back class always seems to help me. If a horse has back class, I try to get it to the level where it used to be. Next, you'd look at race replays, make sure there's no problems. You don't want a horse that's lugging in or lugging out, you know, anything like that. Then it comes race day, and you would actually go, I go look at the horse and watch him walk and make sure his conformation's good. Now, me personally, I like to claim a horse that doesn't look great. I hope to improve the horse and get him to the spot where he needs to be. And by doing that, you can place the horse in a higher level and the horse will run better, hopefully, if everything works out in your favor.
That's interesting. You claim a horse that you hope doesn't look great. That's really interesting. That's a different approach than I've ever heard anybody mention here on the program.
Yeah, I really wouldn't want a horse that looks its best, you know, the coat and the shine to it, and a horse that's running its best, you know. I mean, there's a few horses that are running really good, and they drop it just to get rid of the horse, which is good. But if the horse looks its best, then it's most likely running its best.
Yeah, I always thought it was good to claim a horse that was maybe a little bit of a long shot that people are ignoring, because those are the horses that I think you really have a chance to develop a little bit, or as you say, make them return to their previous level if they had a little bit of talent or whatever. I think it's a good approach. I like that style.
Yes.
Elizabeth Doble's with us here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on HRRN. Elizabeth, when you look at the winners you've had, I mentioned 6-18 here in 2017, 8-38 overall. You're off to a tremendous start. Your leading earner is a horse called My Point Exactly, who's a horse that came into your barn, well, not all that long ago. Tell me a little bit about that horse and some of the other horses that you have in your care today.
He's one of my personal favorites. He's a beautiful white horse, and tall and handsome. I got him when he was coming back off a layoff. They claimed him in June, and he was sent to me later on in the summer. And, you know, it took me a while to get him back to his form, but I had no races for him, so I ended up putting him in the claiming crown just to get a race into him, get him back to wanting to be a racehorse. And, you know, he didn't run good in that race, and I didn't expect him to run good. But then after that, it kind of lit a fire inside of him where he really wanted to run, and I could put him in a... ended up putting him in a claiming race, knowing nobody would claim him. Nobody would risk a horse that's been off for 6 months and just ran a bad race. And he didn't get claimed. He didn't get claimed the two times I put him in. And then I bumped him up to an allowance race, and he had just gotten beat by 2 lengths. But then I knew I had the type of horse that could really run. He was really trying. He finished, I think, 6th or 8th, but... The 2 lengths was, you know, it was I don't want to say it's the jockey's fault or anybody's fault. You know, he got a wide trip, but he really had no place to go. Then last week he ran on Saturday. He ran the Florida Derby day, and he finished a fifth, but then again, he didn't break really well out of the gate that time. So I can't fault him there. I believe, you know, in perfect scenario, he would have been up there in the top three. But you can't always get what you want in the races.
How frustrating is that for a trainer? You put all that time in, all that hard work, you get the horse to the race, which in itself is an accomplishment, and then the horse has a bad trip or breaks poorly, things that are out of your control. How frustrating is that?
It is very frustrating. You try not to let it get to you and try to, you know, progress so that next time you will get what you want, you know, the results. But watching all your hard work go down in a minute, it is really tough to take.
Yeah, that's the thing. It can change immensely. You have a horse that you've worked on and you got right to the perfect state of form and everything, and then, you know, somebody bumps them out of the gate or whatever, and you get ready to tear your hair out. But if you stay the course, you can get it done. And you've had such great luck, and you must spot your horses tremendously well.
I try my best, yeah. You know, you don't know what horses you'll be running against until you're actually in the race. So I try my best to pick a race that will be a little bit less than where they should be, just so that they can get a better result.
Elizabeth, it was just less than a month ago, March 10th, as a matter of fact, that you saddled the winners of both halves of the Late Daily Double at Gulfstream Park. How cool was that?
Oh, that was great. It was first double.
What's it like for a trainer when you knock off the Late Double like that? That had to be pretty cool.
It was, especially because they were long shot horses. You know, nobody really had faith in them, but it's really rewarding.
Did you bet?
No, I don't think better.
Do you ever bet on not only your horses, but any horses?
No, I believe every time I bet, they lose, so I jinx myself, and I stopped that years ago.
Maybe you should start betting on all the other horses in the race.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that you win.
I think they'd get luckier than me.
Elizabeth, what do you think you would be doing right now if you never got into training horses?
When I was young, I wanted to be a vet, you know, although I wanted to do something with animals. So I'm not really sure exactly. I've never thought about another career.
So what other things, well, obviously there's a lot of things that you still want to accomplish in this career, but have you sat down and actually mapped out goals, or do trainers even do that kind of thing?
I just try to get through month by month with what I have. You know, I try to do the best I can with the horses that I have. You know, I know I don't have the stock for, say, a Kentucky Derby. Eventually, you know, hopefully, I'm just hoping for good stock. That would be my goal right now.
Yeah, one step at a time. What's the biggest challenge that you've faced since you went out on your own?
Just like what you were saying about watching the race and something happening, and you can't control it.
Are you a control freak by nature?
Not necessarily. When it comes to winning, I do let it get to me, though.
How about your first win, Elizabeth? Look back on that day. When did that happen, and who was the horse, and what was that like?
And that was in Calder. It was main track only horse, and I couldn't decide whether I wanted to send the horse down there or not, because it's about an hour van ride, and I would have hated to send the horse down there, an hour ride, just to come back. So I waited a while, and then finally I was like, well, the horse is ready to run. I might as well send him down there. And about 3 hours before the race, they mentioned that it was going to be on the main track. And by then, half the field had scratched because I suppose they didn't want to give Lasix to a horse that they weren't sure was going to run. And he ended up winning, and it was great. It was a really good experience.
What did you do that night?
Same thing. Just come back and feed the rest of them and go home.
Come on, you didn't do something special to celebrate that first win?
No. I'm not big on celebrations.
That's the life of a trainer, huh?
Well, Elizabeth, we only have a few minutes left here before we have to wrap things up. But before we get to that point, we always like to end by talking to trainers about something different. And we ask trainers to let us know something that people might not know about them. So outside of horse racing, when you do get some time away from the track, and I know it's rare, what are some of the other hobbies or things that you enjoy doing?
I have a 1.5-year-old son, and he keeps me busy away from the barn. He just started running, and he's babbling, so I really look forward to life with him.
Is it hard to balance both sides of that fence?
No. I try to keep him incorporated in the work as much as I can. You know, I take him to the barn, and he's with me a lot of the time. He goes to the races with me. And, you know, just because I don't want to really miss anything with him.
Does he like the horses?
He loves them.
Is he going to be a future trainer?
Oh, I hope not. I'm looking forward to a doctor, a lawyer, you know. But ultimately, it's his decision.
Well, Elizabeth, we want to wish you all the best. We can't thank you enough for spending a little time with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. So great to hear your story and so happy that you're off to such a fast start. And we wish you all the best, continued success. Like all of our guests who appear on Trainer Talk, you're going to receive a gift courtesy of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. They're one of our sponsors. We'll make sure we get those down to you. And again, all the best moving forward. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much.
All right, Elizabeth Doble's with us here on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton, one of the young, up-and-coming stars in the sport of thoroughbred racing. And, hey, that's what this show is all about, JT.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Yeah, very interesting. Learning from one of the best and our good friend Jeremiah Engelhart. All right, don't forget, if you missed any portion of the show, you can check out the podcast, horseracingradio.net. And if you missed any portion, stay with us for the second half of the show. You're going to hear a special replay of that interview with Elizabeth coming up next from 6:30 to 7 o'clock Eastern Time right here on Trainer Talk. We're back next week with a brand new edition. For our producer, Lee Delapina, for Jude Feld, I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next time on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton.
Nominate your yearlings now to the Fasig Tipton Summer Selected Yearling Sales. These sales are the top 3 yearling sales in North America by rate of return. The July sale in Lexington, Kentucky, July 10th and 11th. The Saratoga sale in Saratoga Springs, New York, August 7th and 8th. And the New York bred sale in Saratoga Springs, New York, August 12th and 13th. Selected sales, superior results. Nominate today at FasigTipton.com.
Bloom Racing.
Majestic City could also still do it, and here he comes.
Majestic City running a big one.
Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Soul Driver the leader, though. Soul Driver in front.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now. Get in on the action at BloomRacing.com.
It all started with a dream. A dream to be the best. To breed the best. To race the best. And to stand the best. Windstar Farm. Dedicated to the dream.